Nice to see you. The next case is in the matter of the appeal by Amy Steele for maltreatment determination. As all parties are aware, counsel for the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Counsel for the respondent will have 15 minutes, and then counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. Counsel, if you're ready to proceed, please do so.
May it please the court. My name is Joel Novak, and I represent Ms. Amy Steele, the appellant in this case. My intent is to argue Issue 2, Section K. October 16, 2017. I want to repeat that date, October 16, 2017. That is the factual error that caused 97% of the problems in this case. Ms. Seeley was never tested on October 16th, 2017. There was no urine to test, so Ms. Seeley could not have come up positive. On October 16th, 2017, Ms. Seeley requested a Rule 25 assessment. Some unknown writer, no name on it, wrote in the record, on October 16th, 2017, Ms. Seeley tested positive for THC. No, she didn't. The test that she was referring to was done on August 19th, 2017. It was done by law enforcement, and Ms. Seeley tested negative. This is the factual error.
Oh, Mr. Noah, are you saying the entire case turns on that?
75% of it turns on that, Your Honor. The director made four findings, and three of them are erroneous because of that one point.
I thought five findings were made to support the decision.
I only recall four, Your Honor. I can, I'm going to go over those four at any rate. No place did the county ever rebut the fact that she was not tested on October 16th. They don't even address the error. They must hope that you don't see it. See it. It's clear as a bell. It's the number one thing that you must realize to justly decide this case. Issue number two, next they go back to a statement Ms. Seeley made on a prior application. Not even a part of this case. It was made on March 17th, 2016. Again, on a prior application, not part of the case. The most astonishing thing is that when Ms. Seeley made the statement, it was absolutely 100% true. It was not false. It was not misleading. It was true. She said, "I have not used in over 10 years. When she made that statement, it was a true statement. Number three, the director of DHS wants to make law which contradicts Minnesota statutes. 181.950 subdivision 10 is perfectly clear. Positive test results are levels at or above the threshold detection levels contained in the standards. The standard for THC is 50 nanograms.
We're well aware what the standard is, but the issue isn't whether standard was met. The issue is whether she actually used. There is an indication that there were residue of THC in her system, right?
Right, but the reason...
And in addition to that, she admitted to using it before she was pulled over. Correct.
She did. There was one admission, and that's the one piece of evidence that shows there was actual use.
Well, it's not the only piece, but it's certainly a strong piece because she readily admitted to it, so it's hard to contradict that.
Right, and we don't contradict that she used on the 23rd of August. She absolutely did.
And that wasn't within the 10 years?
That was after she made the statement. It was the first time in over 10 years that she had used.
And just so I'm clear, there was a... apart from whether she could or could not have been convicted of you know, possession or drunk driving or anything. I mean, she was required not to use, period. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, yes, it was. In addressing that, since it's come up, she could have gotten a waiver for that. She was never told that she could get a waiver.
Waiver for what? To use
a waiver for the one-time use.
Oh, okay.
And to be honest, the county has so closed its mind on this case that a waiver would have done no good. Ms. Brown testified at the administrative hearing when asked if she comes back in 2 years, because 2 years after, which where we are now, after use, then you can apply again. Ms. Brown said, no, I would recommend against her 2 years from now. So the county had made up its mind. It did not want to be confused with facts.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, you know, when we had the initial issues, there was a settlement agreement, right?
And that was so that was the first application.
Right. So, I mean, there was some effort to, you know, work with her. And so, you know, when that, and obviously you have a different view on the facts, but, you know, I'm not so sure I would say, I mean, the alternative argument would be, well, you know, the county gave her a chance and she blew it. Yeah, now we are done.
Well,
right. That would be the other version of events.
But the agreement wasn't that she did anything wrong. She didn't have to make corrections for that agreement.
And perhaps again, I'm confused. Did the tour agreement, did she agree not to use?
Not as a part of the settlement. The settlement was based on her husband's wrongdoing, nothing on her whatsoever. Approximately, I believe it was 17 years before he had a felony theft charge. That disqualified them as a couple. It disqualified her if she lived with him. She divorced him and put in the new application. That's what the agreement was. And the reason we have the 50 nanogram standard is the low amounts that she came up with could have happened from passive inhalation, could have happened from eating something, could have happened from some lotion, could have happened from wearing the wrong thing.
Could have happened from using drugs.
It could have. But if you look at it, when you use marijuana, now this is average marijuana, average person. And we know there's no such thing as average marijuana and average person. Everyone's different. But if you take the average, it will, when you smoke, if you take that as day zero, at day 3.5, you will peak out in the parabola. Then you will come down in 7 days. It will be out of your system. If you look at all of her positives, or all, not all of her positives, but every time there's a trace amount in the record, none of them form a parabola. If you look at the dates, it was so random. No one could time these tests. It seems there was always a trace amount, but it never got above trace amount.
And she admitted use. I mean, she admitted
use. She admitted the use one time. That wasn't...
The fact that admitted use of marijuana, I mean, that suggests that the presence of trace amounts isn't by accident, that it would be consistent with her admission that she occasionally used.
But if you look at that a parabola takes 7 days and you look at the dates, none of those could come out with use. When I was a prosecutor, if I got a trace amount, I would test regularly to see if it formed a parabola. Human Services never did that. So there is nothing other than these very small trace amounts to indicate use. And if you look at the dates of them, you can see that they do not form a use graph. And that's why we have the 50 nanogram level. It used to be 100, it was lowered to 50, which makes perfect sense because at day 7 you're going to come out between, or day 3.5, you're going to come out usually between 50 and 75 if you smoke one marijuana size or a cigarette size joint of marijuana. The director simply does not have the ability to set the own standard. And the testimony was not use, it was positive. She tested positive, she tested positive, she tested positive. That's what all the government witnesses said. She never once tested positive. Not even the law enforcement test was positive. The only reason we know is because she admitted it. And she gave an explanation. To me, there's no excuse, but it's a very mitigating explanation. Number four, issue number four, on September 29th, 2017, Ms. Seeley wrote, "I will abstain when I am with my granddaughter, and if at a family event where alcohol is provided, I have no intent to get intoxicated." She kept that promise. The director says it is false because she had a drink when her granddaughter was not around. "When I am with my granddaughter," it is right in the evidence, the statement she signed, and I'm not sure where the director studied English, but that nothing she did makes her promise false. Finally, the director says, even though Mrs. Brown wrote the policy, got Ms. Seeley to sign it, the written policy was in evidence, and both Ms. Brown and Ms. Seeley and the statement were all exactly the same. When Ms. Pedersen kind of mumbled, "There's something more than the words contained in that policy." Now, she wasn't around when it was written. She wasn't around when it was signed. And she literally mumbled, "There's something more." She was found more credible. No reasonable fact finder could find that more credible. Ms. Seeley prays that you order DHS to issue her the foster care license and return her granddaughter to her immediately. Barring any further questions.
Yeah, what about her guilty plea?
She didn't plead guilty. She entered an Alford plea. And the evidence...
And we're well aware of the difference between an Alford plea and a straight-up plea. But the fact of the matter is she was convicted.
She was convicted. But if you look at the evidence behind it, and this is an administrative hearing, a second case, not now, but up until this point, the evidence that the government had could not have convicted her. She got nowhere near that 50 nanogram level. The only reason she entered the Alford plea is because she believed, if I get this, she was told she couldn't get her granddaughter because she was arrested.
Well,
she,
I understand the factual basis underlying it, but the fact of the matter is she accepted that guilty plea. She was convicted of that. And a guilty plea, whether it's an Alford plea or any other type of plea, still carries a collateral consequences with it.
It does, but unlike pleading guilty or being convicted in a full trial, it is not case dispositive. There's not a collateral estoppel issue. Yes, it's some evidence, but this is the first time she's had a chance to be before a court, so.
What about the fact that, I think it's hard to get around the fact that she admitted to using marijuana before, but when she talked to the person from the county, she never mentioned her use of marijuana. She did talk about being pulled over and the incident, but she never revealed that aspect of it.
She didn't say...
Why isn't that not being truthful, not being honest?
Well...
And violating that aspect of it.
Two points, Your Honor. She didn't say, "I used marijuana the night before." But she did say, "I was pulled over for driving while under the influence." Not driving while intoxicated, driving while under the influence. And number two, that was never the points relied on for the false statements and dishonesty. It was the statement she had made in the prior application, and it was the policy that I'm not going to drink when my granddaughter's around. So maybe the state could have relied on that, but they didn't. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
May it please the court. My name is Danielle Olson from Swift County, and I'm the Swift County attorney. With respect to the response of the county, ultimately, there's been some claims that there has been no evidentiary hearing that allows Ms. Seeley to present her issues before essentially the administrative law judge. And in this matter, I would just remind the court that this was a combined appeal to the administrative law judge, which means she could take both cases, the maltreatment finding that the county had made, as well as the denial of foster care license, both at the same time before the administrative law judge. So procedurally in that, what happens when Swift County Human Services made a finding of maltreatment based on her charge and ultimately her Alford plea and the facts that did meet the preponderance of the evidence that this had happened that met the standard of maltreatment, specifically neglect in this case. Ultimately, Ms. Seeley then had the opportunity to request consideration from Swift County Human Services, which she did. Ultimately, she was provided with those notices, and ultimately that request was denied. Then we also provide her notice that she's able to then appeal to the administrative law judge. Again, she was afforded that opportunity in this case, which she did and was represented. There's policy and procedure that's used in this type of situation. She's afforded the rights and responsibilities to be able to present her own witnesses, take testimony, and again, that's before a neutral administrative law judge. That was also done in this case. The administrative law judge made her findings based after a day trial, after numerous witnesses testifying. And again, that is a recommendation. Once that recommendation came back, then there's an exception time period which the attorneys are able to respond to. So every single piece of procedure was followed in this matter. Ultimately, the administrative law judge upheld the maltreatment finding for the neglect and also upheld the denial of the foster care license.
What is the actual record evidence of drug or alcohol use during the time frame in question?
Certainly. Ultimately, the biggest issue and the most recent one was from her August 17, 2018, when she was pulled over by the police officer.
With the 8-year-old in the car, hence the maltreatment. Right.
Correct.
Again, that was admitted drug use.
Correct. And the totality of the circumstances where the county is able to look at is past history as well. But the main piece was with her own child in the car, which then qualified as a neglect, and hence the maltreatment was upheld. After that, the ALJ makes that recommendation. The commissioner then reviews. There's a lot of talk from the appellant in this matter of rubber stamping. Again, the county does not believe there's rubber stamping. There's separate eyes on. They made separate analysis as to the exceptions that the attorneys had requested. And again, the commissioner then issued a final order, again, upholding both the finding of the maltreatment and as well as the denial.
But what's the evidence of any marijuana or other drug use after August of 2017?
So after August of 2017, it's my understanding that at that point, she was no longer approved for foster care licensing. And so I don't know how many tests they actually completed after that. I don't know. I can't answer that. Prior to that, as the record would contain, there was numerous tests that the creatinine levels were essentially below standard and tampered
with. Diluted samples.
Correct.
That was the county's.
Correct. And ultimately, you know, again, the county purports that all the rights afforded to Ms. Seeley have been afforded. Again, at this point, the purpose of the foster care licensing is to set minimum standards so that we can provide a safe and healthy environment for that child to go to. This child specifically was removed from a chemically dependent and unhealthy environment, and the last thing that the county and the state wants to do is place that child back into one. Again, you'll hear him talk about, or excuse me, the appellant talk about that it was just a one-time occurrence. Ultimately, the big issue is in order to apply for a foster care license, you have to be able to attest that you have been chemically free for 2 years prior to that license. Again, no way could Ms. Seeley meet that standard. And ultimately, even if she was granted a foster care license, that does not mean that that child will be placed with that person. And again, the relief that the appellant is seeking is stating, return that child to grandmother. That is not a relief that is properly before this court, and that is not a relief that can be granted.
You're saying this isn't an adoption case?
Correct.
Even if it isn't an adoption case, I mean, isn't that going to be the likely outcome, whether we want to, whether it's precisely before us or not? Because isn't that what grandmother ultimately wants to do, is be able to adopt?
That is correct. Ultimately, if a foster care license is not granted, any person, grandparent, or any other person is allowed to request a private home study, and if that home study makes recommendation for an adoption, they can still have another avenue to go to. Just because the Department of Human Services doesn't issue that foster care license does not mean they're completely dead in the water. What typically happens is there's a funding trail that goes along with that. So then the adoption subsidy would not be approved because they have not met the foster care license requirements.
Right. I mean, there's actually at least two collateral results from this. One, without the license, you're not going to be able to get the funding from the state.
Correct.
Which could impact grandmother. But two, the reality of if she doesn't get the license, will that have an impact on her ability to adopt? I mean, is the county going to be looking at it and saying, well, hey, you didn't qualify for the license, but we're going to look past all the issues that were raised there, maltreatment, drug use, all that, and we're still going to allow you to adopt. It seems highly unlikely.
I would agree that would be highly unlikely. Typically, the process is...
Unless she improves.
Correct.
I mean, if there's a change in circumstances, perhaps there will be a change. Okay. Thank you.
Certainly.
Did we later undergo a urine test on October 16th, 2017?
I do apologize. I was quickly trying to look back. I believe what he's citing to was there was a finding in the commissioner's order, and it's cited to the October, and I just can't find if that was a urine sample or if that was what he's indicating, that was a chemical use assessment. If at that,
I think what he argued is that is a really critical, erroneous finding by the ALJ that the commissioner adopted, and that is that there was no test given, that the reference in that report was to the August 19th, or whatever date it was.
The county would argue otherwise. That is not the critical piece in this matter.
You're not necessarily disputing his assessment or his argument that there was no test given that day, but that it doesn't matter?
Correct. At this point in time, I couldn't tell you without going back to see all of the exhibits and maybe contained in the record. I just couldn't tell you right at this point. But ultimately, that would not be the ultimate decision change one way or another in this matter.
And that is because she can't say that she's been chemically free for 2 years.
Correct. Additionally, part of the claim by the county is that she was not forthcoming with respect to when she met with the social worker. Again, it was clear in the record she did not indicate that she had used THC. And ultimately, I think you'll see the ALJ's comment in there is that this social worker didn't quite use the correct terms when they made their maltreatment finding. They had used arrest, they had used a charge. But again, it was preponderance of the evidence of all the facts contained in the police officer's report, her slurred speech, her unable and inability to communicate, her observations of, the officer's observations, and the neutral party that seen her crossing over the fog line, going over the center line, breaking, going into turn lanes. This all put the child in risk and was determined to be maltreatment as her minor child was in that car. Those facts are not disputed, and it does meet the preponderance of the evidence. And so again, the county is not hung up on the term of a guilty Alford, because again, it does not matter. It's a preponderance of the evidence is the standard. Again, as previously indicated, appellant continues to cite that in order to have an adoption, he needs the licensing at this point. Again, the license does not control and does not mandate that child will be placed. They look at the totality of the circumstances, and ultimately in this case, that the child is not going to be placed there.
Yeah, I mean, as a practical matter, in my experience, you're not going to get a pre-adoptive placement if you aren't licensed.
Correct.
As a foster care provider.
Correct. The respondent does not have anything further unless you have any other questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much, counsel. We'll now hear for counsel for the appellant. You may exercise your rebuttal.
All the hearings up to this point have been administrative. The job in administrative procedure is to look for facts, all the facts. Unless there's a collateral estoppel issue that you can put into facts, you have to look at the underlying facts. The fact is that in August when she was stopped, she was not under the influence. And the procedure that the county talks about was not due process. It was a deprivation of due process.
Well, but she, by pleading guilty, she gave up any due process rights.
Well, in that case.
With that case.
In that case, but I'm talking about the process set up by DHS. It took over 2 years to get here.
Is the record of the Alford plea in the hearing? Is there a transcript of the Alford plea? Was that presented in the record for any of these administrative hearings?
I don't believe so, but I can't swear to that, Your Honor.
Because, I mean, if it's not in the record,
I want to deal with the rubber stamping and go one step beyond that. The only time facts presented by Ms. Seeley were considered up until she got before the ALJ was to say how they were legally wrong. They weren't considered by the director. They weren't considered by the county leader. I forget what her title is. And every time, different findings were found. It was like shooting at a moving target.
Well, is it that different findings were found, or they were correcting things in the record, such as that you could they consider the fact that she was merely arrested?
Well, that didn't come till the ALJ. Both after both requests, okay, in the investigation, it was found that arresting was enough. In the review, or in the peer review, it was found that that was enough. In the county director's review, it was found that was enough. After both reconsiderations, it was found that it was enough. And when it went to DHS, it was found that it was enough. But different issues were brought up. In fact, the admission to smoking marijuana in August wasn't brought up until the final decision of the director. That was initially was not part of the case.
So does that make the decision wrong under our standard of review?
I'm not sure, but there's certainly a due process problem there. If you don't know what you're fighting against, she never got a chance to address that issue. There were 12 tests after the August. I can give you the dates if you want them. And they were on 10-18, 11-18, 11-30, 12-9, 12-1, 12-14, 12-22, 12-27, 12-28, the 6th of January, the 10th of January, and the 18th of January, all negative. So certainly there was no marijuana use after that date.
How does that affect the ultimate issue, as I understand, from the county's perspective, that your client hadn't been drug-free for 2 years at the time she was requesting this license?
It doesn't. I was just addressing the question that came up in opponent's response. She did use that one time. We cannot deny that. However, again, under very mitigating circumstances, the child that she had taken care of for months was pulled out of her home. That's not an excuse, but she said, I was very upset. I did something really stupid. It is critical. The 16.
Is that enough to support the maltreatment finding or conclusion?
No, because when she was driving, first, her granddaughter was not around at that time. And second, when she was driving, she was not under the influence. Enough time had passed, and her THC level was so low that she wasn't under the influence. Now,
although there was evidence she was, by people who observed her driving and observed her demeanor after she was stopped.
No doubt she was driving poorly. But number one, she wasn't under the influence. She was just driving poorly. Number two,
that's an awful reach with an Alford. I mean, we don't have the transcript, but presumably, if it was done correctly, in an Alford plea, there would have been a colloquy suggesting, you know, well, do you agree that these facts, you know, would suggest you were driving under the influence? A jury could find beyond a reasonable doubt that you were driving under the influence.
Well, we do.
With a child in the car. I mean, if there wasn't a, I'll let you make whatever final comments you'd like to make.
Okay. Your analysis is in the record, Your Honor. Please look at that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Novak. Thank you very much, Ms. Olson.